You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom. Welcome to the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you save and transform your marriage no matter where you are, no matter what the crisis. Sometimes you're right on the edge there and you're not sure what to do. This is the podcast to help you pull back from that edge to find a new way of moving forward in your relationship. Let me share with you the story of Anna. Anna called me on the phone and she was absolutely breathless. The first words out of her mouth were, "I have to save my marriage." And then before I could say anything, she ran through the desperate reasons why she needed to save her marriage. She needed to save it for the kids. She needed to prove to herself that she could make this work. She didn't want to be in trouble financially. She didn't want to lose the house. She didn't want to lose her husband. She didn't want to lose the attention. She didn't want to use the prestige in the community. She didn't want to have to go back to church to face people. She didn't want to have to deal with her friends and their questions and her family and their questions. And on she went. She spoke. I don't think she took a breath. I'm not sure how she got the oxygen in to keep going, but she kept that air going in and kept on going through the reasons. And then she took a breath. And I said, take a bigger breath. Take a large breath, because we've got to change something if we're going to move forward with working on your relationship. If we're going to save your marriage, you have to make one huge change right now. And that is to go from desperation to aspiration. To go from that desperate place to that huge place where you can actually work, because desperation is not a good place to be working from. So let me talk a little bit about why that is. You see, desperation comes from our fear brain. We really have several brains in our head, and we don't realize it. We don't realize that there are three distinct brains. It's called the triune brain theory, that says that there are three brains in our head, and there are only two phases that a brain can be in. And because of that, there are only two phases that we are capable of being in, and one is fear, the other is love. Another way of understanding love is to be at a place of gratitude and appreciation, of being at a place of aspiration. But fear and desperation are much more of our core piece. So let's just talk for a minute about how that brain is layered on. The most primitive part of our brain is called the amygdala. Now, the amygdala is designed really for one thing. It's called the reptilian brain. It's all designed to figure out if there's a threat there. Now, that's it. Just looking for the threats, trying to figure out how to stay alive. It's just a basic mechanism of survival, which means it's always looking for the threats on the horizon. Never looking for what are the opportunities, always looking for the threats. And so because of that, that piece of the brain is just wired into kind of a threat mentality. Right on top of that piece of the brain, the amygdala or the lizard brain, is the limbic system or the mammalian brain. The limbic system is the part that has emotions. It feels those emotions, and it really is the place where we add on the way we connect with other people. Lizards or other creatures even, lizards aren't much about worrying about whether they get the warm fuzzies from other lizards. And if they're around them, they're around them to procreate or for survival purposes. That's as opposed to other warm-blooded animals, mammalian animals, that pack together because there's a sense of connection between them. If you notice, when you look at a bunch of dogs together, they have an affinity towards each other, which isn't just about survival. They either get along or they don't get along, but they have an emotional response to that. And look at humans. Humans are even more so, where we either connect with some people or disconnect with other people. There is an emotional response to being with people. Now, if you add on the limbic system and the amygdala, you have the emotion of fear, the emotion of feeling overwhelmed, the emotion of desperation. Now, on the top of the limbic system, there's another brain, and it's the one that the humans are most proud of, but it's not the one that's often in command, and that's the neocortex. The neocortex is a part of your brain that we're most proud of. It's the part of the brain that's all about reason and about vocalization. You know, one of the real differences between humans and other creatures is because of the words we have, we can think about concepts down the road. We can wonder, what am I going to do tomorrow? What am I going to do next week? What am I going to do in 10 years? as far as we know, animals don't contemplate that too much. And they're just kind of in with what's going on right now. They might be very content to be around other animals with them, but they're not all coming up with a plan of what they're going to do next Thanksgiving or next Christmas or what they're going to do after the new year. They're just hanging out together. Humans are a little different. We can call forth thoughts and begin to have interesting ideas because of the words of the way we think about them. We notice that humans think in words and pictures, while animals would only be thinking in pictures. And so because of that, I can choose to think about what happened last Christmas. I have a place in there that it's a place setting. I can think about what happened on my wedding day. I can think about the last argument I had with somebody. I can think about the last argument I had with my wife. And I can call those up. And because of that, I also suffer the emotional response of that. That limbic system gets activated by how we think. And so if you're constantly thinking about all the bad things that could happen, you're feeling all of those bad pieces, which is triggering the deeper parts. In other words, our neocortex, the part of us that could steer us towards reason, if you kind of think in that Spock-like way, also steers us towards pain and discomfort because we go back towards those feelings of threat, and then we create thoughts of threat. And so when Anna was talking to me, she was very clear about all of those fears that she could name. Right. And every time she named a fear, it dragged her back to that primitive part of her brain. It dragged her past the limbic into the amygdala again. And so every time she did that, she reactivated the fear response of her body. Now, what is the fear response of your body? You know it as being flooded with adrenaline and a feeling, that fight or flight place where maybe even your feet feel like running or your arms feel like flailing, and you just feel like you're so captured, or you feel like you've got to get away, or you feel like you got to take someone on. All those pieces come from that amygdala. And because of that, we can get ourselves wrapped up and do lots of damage to relationships because we're lashing out from that amygdala, that threat place, that fight or flight. It's kind of like when you're dealing with a reptile, right? You get near them and they're going to strike, or they're going to get away from you. And those are the two responses that come out of that part of the brain. Problem is that neocortex, if we're misusing it, if we're constantly drawing from our desperation place, we're constantly triggering that fear response. We're constantly triggering that threat response. And so what happens is, instead of using the top part of our brain, which is about aspiration and love, we drag ourselves right back down to that primitive part of the brain that's all about threat. And with the limbic system tied in there, all about fear of how you're going to lose this connection or lose all of these opportunities in life. And so when that happens, we find ourselves caught in this place of desperation. And I would just like to say that the place where marriages are actually saved is not desperation. It's aspiration. Think about how your relationship developed. Likely it developed around the pattern of aspiration. You were probably talking with your spouse, or before they were your spouse, about the things you wanted to do, the things you wanted to accomplish, your dreams, your hope, your expectations. You were listening to your spouse's dreams, hopes, and expectations, and you were falling in love with the idea of what could be. You were falling in love with the potential that was there. You fall in love with aspiration. But when the connection is threatened, you suddenly feel desperation. It pulls you to a different place because you don't want to lose what you felt before. Okay, so let's go through that one more time because I want you to be very clear about this. What happens when you're falling in love, when you're falling into connection with each other, when you're deepening that level of connection you have to each other? You're working from an aspirational place. You're aware of what you appreciate about this other person, and you're grateful for that, and you feel that deep sense of love. When you're coming apart, when the connection becomes strained, then you're working from a place of desperation. You've gone from aspiration to desperation. And the desperation begins to pull us further and further into that place of threat in our brain. And so when Anna was talking to me, she had lost all sense of aspiration of the relationship. She was only working on desperation. She was only working on the threat of what might happen, what she might lose. And so as she told me her litany of all of the things that she might lose, She was actually just pulling herself back down further and further towards that threat model, doing nothing to move her towards what she really wanted. We never save a relationship out of desperation. It just won't work because it's not a connecting place. When somebody is desperate, think about how many times in life you've seen that. Somebody is so desperate that they actually repel people. You know, one of the pieces of advice they have when you're going into a job is to make sure you're not too desperate. Now, you know, there are pieces of that that you go, well, how could I not be desperate if I need a job? It's simple. It's whether you're telling yourself over and over of how much you need that job, or if you're asking yourself the question, is this the job for me? There are lots of jobs out there. The question is this the one that works for me? Not I'm desperate for a job, but is this the job for me? The same thing is true in relationships. When people are most desperate, they find it the hardest to find a relationship. How many people have you heard the story where they were looking and looking and looking for somebody to date and they just couldn't find it? And so finally they gave up and into their life walked this other person. Well, what was happening before is their desperation was leading them down the path and they were finding that they were repelling people instead of attracting people. Desperation is repelling. Aspiration, though, is very attracting. It pulls people towards you and it pulls hope and help towards you because you're moving at a different vibration. And so when you're talking about that, you're letting off these subtle clues. Now, I'm not talking here about some metaphysics of this. If you believe that, that's fine. I'm talking about the little pieces you let out, the way you talk, what you're looking for, what you're focused on, the places that you talk about things, the way you are with people, your emotional state. There is a way that we all recognize when somebody is just at a desperation point and it pulls us away from them. But then look to the people that you see who really seem like they're moving somewhere. They really have their hopes and dreams together. They're aspirational. That's attractive. And so as you think about this, begin to recognize that the aspiration, the part of you that was in process when you were connecting, is the part that we've got to recall. We've got to move back towards. Now, even if your marriage is in trouble, you can aspire to have a much better relationship. You can aspire to have the dream relationship you've always wanted, but you've got to disconnect from the desperation in order to get there. So let's talk for a few minutes about some words that are going to set the stage for you. On the one side is fear, and on the other side is love or appreciation. So one of the things to recognize about fear is that it's triggered. That's just the part of your brain that's constantly looking for threats. It's triggered. There's nothing you can do to stop that. And so recognize that the moments when you go, oh, I'm so afraid I'm going to lose this. Well, you're acting naturally. That's what I would expect on automatic. That means that your guard dropped a little bit and you allowed it to be triggered. So recognize that's a natural part of the process. And then we're going to set it aside because love and aspiration are chosen. When you choose to move in aspirational ways, it's exactly that. It's a choice. It's always a choice. We always have a choice to step away from our fear piece, the one that's triggered, and move to something greater, the one that's chosen. So think about how often you're triggered by the fears, and then recognize that there are times in your life when you've chosen the aspiration, when you've decided to move in that direction. And that's available to you at any time. Many people say, well, what am I supposed to do? Something made me fearful. Yes, that's the automatic trigger. Now, can you choose to move towards an aspirational viewpoint? Now, let's put two other words together. Fear is reactive. Love and aspiration are responsible. It's reactive versus response. Reactivity versus responsibility. So reactivity means that when somebody is talking to us and we feel that fear, we react in one of two ways. We either react combatively or withdrawingly. We either react in a fighting way or a flight way. Or we freeze. That's the other possibility. But it's reactive. And so when we find ourselves kind of pushing against, either to get away from or pushing against in order to fight, we know that we're in a fear response. It's reactive. Now, as I said, aspiration is responsible. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that whatever's going on in your relationship is your fault. We have a problem in our country of talking about responsibility because we believe it's about that same place that was true in our childhood when somebody said, who's responsible for this spilled milk? Who's responsible for this place here? Who's responsible for the broken furniture? Who's responsible for that broken window? Now, somebody could have stepped up and said, I'll take responsibility for that and not have caused it. But that's not how we were trained. We were trained to equate responsibility in that, who's responsible for that broken window, with who did it, who's to blame. But what if you can move to the real word, responsible? Having responsibility is the ability to respond. I'm responsible. I'm able to choose my response. So instead of being reactive, I choose a response that I want. I choose to head in a certain way. I'm going to choose to have a response that's different than perhaps my spouse is having, and perhaps that's different than the one I've been having. I choose to respond differently. And then let's drop down one more. The difference between frantic and focused. Fear is frantic. When Anna was calling me and telling me all of the stuff that was going on, she was absolutely frantic. When I calmed her down a little bit, we got more focused. And whenever you become focused, you become much more attached to that love and aspiration. Fear can get you doing this and that and whatever else you can find out. And so many times I've had people tell me, you know, I read this and I read this and I tried this and I tried this and I tried to manipulate them and I tried reverse psychology and I tried to cast a spell and on they go with these crazy ideas. None of those work because they are frantic and they look frantic to the other person. Then there's the focused ones that say, you know what, I'm going to go in this direction. I've got this bit of information that makes sense to me and I'm going to go in that direction. I become focused on my target and I become focused on the way to get there. Until you're focused, you're going to be frantic. Remember, the difference between fear and love or fear and aspiration start with triggered or chosen. Frantic is that automatic. It's just triggered. You choose to be focused. You choose to find the best material, the best resource, the best theory, the best approach, and then you follow it with focus. Now let's talk about two more words. The difference between a survive and thrive mentality. Fear is about survival. When people are stuck in that fear place about their marriage, they're telling me about the things that they feel threaten their survival. Now, let me say feel, because most people come through a divorce, if that were to happen, and survive. You know, that is the standard for people. They might not survive the way they want to. They may not have the life they want, but they do make it through. And so when we have people who are fearing that they can't survive, you know, how could I survive with less income, or how could I survive with less retirement, or how could I survive with less access to the kids? How could I survive without, and they name it on, they're stuck in that fear place because the survival mode, I'm fearing my survival, that's all about the fear place. But when we decide to thrive, that no matter what happens to us, no matter what happens in our life, we can thrive. That's a different place. That's aspirational. I'll choose to thrive. If the worst comes to happen, I'll learn from it. I'll get back up and I'll keep moving forward. If I don't know what else to do, I'll learn from that and I'll learn the lessons from that and I'll take it in and I'll step forward. That's all about thriving. The mentality of I can grow through this, I can make my way through this, and I will be fine on the backside. That's thriving. Now, let me tell you one thing. When I watch people save their marriage and work to save their marriage, they are people of courage. It comes from the heart. And when it comes from the heart, it already is a thriving place. I'm always humbled by how hard people work to save their marriage. I always say, you know, my customers, my clients are heroes in my mind because they're taking on something that culture says, toss aside. It's too hard. Move on. If the marriage isn't working, toss it aside. You can just file some paperwork and you'll be fine. But the people I come in contact with have chosen a different approach. And they say, you know what? I want to live up to my commitment. I want to build a relationship I'm proud of. I want to build a relationship that shows my kids what they can build. I want to build something that is fulfilling for both of us. Now we're aspirational. Now we're looking at the thriving place. That's heroic work. That's courageous work. Okay, back to the list. Fear is about chance. Love and aspiration is about choice. When people are stuck in that fear place, they act as if it just happened to them. They had no way of dealing with this. It wasn't, you know, it just kind of came upon them. Somehow something happened and it just was by chance that this happened. But people recognize when they are in that love and aspiration place that it's about a choice. They can choose to go down one route or another route. That we don't just wander through the wilderness of relationships. We get to choose the route we want to take. We get to choose how we connect with a spouse. We get to choose how we work on that. That's the difference between chance and choice. Fearful people only see the chances. Just kind of happened. Aspirational people, when they make the shift over to aspiration, then they see the choices that are available. Which means that fear is also default. That's just our regular way of being. That part of the brain that is looking for threat, we can't disconnect it, and we really don't want to, because there are times in our life when we need that primitive part of the brain to say, whoa, this is dangerous. This is not safe. When I'm on my trail runs, there are times when I need my amygdala to be warning me that something is not right. Something's dangerous. When I was running today, it was slippery, it was wet, and I was running right beside a drop-off, and I had to be careful with my feet. I wanted to make sure to make it through there, so I needed to be focused, but at the same time, my amygdala had warned me that I needed to pay attention. It was slippery, it was messy, and I needed to watch it. So that place of our brain being on default of threat, it's not bad. It's just that we don't want it all the time, because then when we move from default, we move to decide. And what I love about that word decide is it means to kill off. It's about getting rid of another alternative. So if you're sitting here going, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should work on my marriage or not. You get to choose, and either choice is up to you. But if you choose to work on your relationship, you kill off the fact that you're going to just let it go the way it's going to go. You kill off that because you've decided this. You've headed in this direction. And so you kill off the other options. And that's an important thing to think about. I've read a story years ago about somebody who needed to get across a field. And they could either go way, way down the fence and turn up and get to where they needed to go. Or they could cross a field and be there in no time. There's only one problem. In that field was the bull. And so as the person was standing there, he took his hat off, threw it over the fence. And the person said, what are you doing? He said, well, now I've got my hat on the other side. I'm going to have to climb in. Once I'm in, I might as well take off. And that's what I mean by deciding, killing off the other option. The option of walking all the way around was gone because the hat went over. He had thrown his hat across the fence and was ready to go. He climbed across, grabbed his hat, and took off for home. Now, is that safe? Well, that's not the whole point of the story. The point of the story is that deciding. And sometimes we make a choice. We decide to go in a way that might seem scary to us, recognizing that many times the scary is not in actuality so scary. And the place where we don't know what to do, we can find how to do it. So making that choice to decide to go that direction is the important part. Now, let me say the final one is probably the most crucial. Fear is about me. Aspiration is about we. If you have heard me talk about this, we is the focus of marriage. You're trying to get to a place of being a team, of having each other's backs, of being in this together. And when you don't do that, you're acting as a me. And it's what do I get? And what's threatening me? And what's dangerous for me? And whenever we're functioning from a me perspective, it's going to be very difficult to save the relationship, because what you're focused on is what am I getting out of this and what am I about to lose? That's the wrong focus. How can we move forward in better ways? That's magic. And so part of your task is to ask the question, how can I step into we, which brings us into the aspirations of this relationship? Whenever you can leave the me behind and step into we. Now, remember, that doesn't mean you lose yourself to the relationship. It means you bring your best self to the relationship, but you're seeing yourself as a team. Suddenly you move to that aspirational place. Now, let me make an invitation to you. If you're saying, yeah, I know, I recognize I need to do that. The first thing I said to Anna is we've got to find you a plan. We've got to create the path for you, and you need some understandings. If you're at the place where you're going, I just don't understand this. I don't get how to do this. I'm going to invite you to grab my Save the Marriage system. It's been used by people all over the world. Now we're at about 85,000 people have used this material to save their marriage all around the world. And the reason it helps is because it gives you an idea of what you're building towards and then tells you how to do it. And if you find yourself going, okay, that's good, but I need more. If you've got the system and you're still trying to figure this out, I do have the virtual coaching program, and you can check that out by going to savethemarriage.com/virtual coaching. If you're ready to take action and grab the system, go to savethemarriage.com, read about it, learn about it, and then grab the system. If you're ready for something one step past that, that's the virtual coaching, and I invite you to join me in that program. Either way, I want you to have the material you need to escape out of this fear place, this desperation. Let's move you to the aspiration. Let's move you to the place where you become responsible, that you choose your path. You become focused on where you're getting to. You thrive as you're moving forward. You make a choice, you decide, and you build a we. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you do the courageous work of saving your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.